Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
Now we're making babies with the Master of the National Maternity Hospital, Professor Shane Higgins, is back with me in studio today to answer all of your listener questions and queries. Shane, good afternoon. How are things?
Good, thanks, Andrea. How are you?
Not bad. 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number, or you can drop us an email, which we often encourage you to do, at lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. And that's where we want to start, Shane, today. We want to start with we have two really interesting listener emails. People got in touch. They're looking for your advice about two kind of specific issues, but I think they'll relate to a lot of our listeners. I wonder if you can please ask Dr. Higgins to please cover an episode with regards to endometriosis, because I feel really let down by my IVF clinic as we presented to them after my husband's cancer diagnosis. After four rounds of unsuccessful IVF, I've discovered I may have silent endometriosis. I've now had two miscarriages from natural conception after the IVF treatment, and thanks to my acupuncturist, I requested my notes from my clinic to find the whole way through my treatment. My left ovary is now completely immobile. So I'm really interested to get Shane Higgins' thoughts on this today.
Yeah, sure. Great. Thanks for the email. So endometriosis is a very unusual condition in that we still to this day don't know exactly why it arises. But the condition is defined where lining of the uterus, which is called the endometrium, comes to lie outside the uterus, in the pelvis, on the ovaries, involving the fallopian tubes. And sometimes it's even been identified as far removed from the pelvis as the bladder, the rectum, and even the lungs. So we don't know why it spreads or how it spreads. It's too simplistic to think that it just travels through the fallopian tubes and gets there. But it is a condition that can affect patients in many ways. There's a really good guideline, and I'll draw paper, rather, you know, I won't be able to cover it all, but there's a really good guideline published by the National Clinical Practice Guidelines from the Women and Infants Healthcare Programme, published earlier this year, written by Irish clinicians, which kind of takes patients in a stepwise fashion through the symptoms that they might present with. But anyone with chronic pelvic pain, anyone with what's called secondary dysmenorrhea, which is new period pain, heavy periods, pain during intercourse. And then the more unusual symptoms would include things like pain passing a bowel motion, a cyclical pain passing a bowel motion, or cyclical pain passing urine, which means around the time of your period, these symptoms worsen. And anyone with those types of symptoms should certainly be considering that they may have endometriosis and should be referred to a gynecology unit that would be able to investigate and treat.
So that's one element of the query, I suppose, with regards to this listener possibly having endometriosis and looking for maybe a diagnosis around that.
Yeah.
With her husband's cancer diagnosis and going to an IVF clinic and four rounds of unsuccessful IVF, what would your advice be to them?
I suppose the problem with endometriosis and fertility is if it affects your ovaries and you don't ovulate, or it blocks ovulation, or it blocks the transport of the egg to the fallopian tube, or it damages your fallopian tubes, then that's where you might need to go down the road of IVF. But once you're in that IVF program, they're removing the eggs from the body, they're fertilizing them outside the body, and they're putting them back into the uterus. So you should be bypassing the endometriosis. I think the reference to silent endometriosis simply means that the patient may not have symptoms but yet have the disease, and that's certainly possible. But I think if, you know, being referred to an IVF unit if you've got a diagnosis of endometriosis, if it particularly it affects the fallopian tubes or it's a severe case of endometriosis, is very appropriate. But I think just, you know, the cancer diagnosis and the possibility of endometriosis, they've already almost bypassed that by going down the road of the IVF clinic anyway.
The listener goes on to tell us that, you know, even after the four unsuccessful rounds of IVF, that she had two miscarriages from natural conception after the IVF treatment.
Yeah, always possible. And I say that to patients who are planning on going down the road of IVF, is when you least expect it, when you take the pressure off yourself, that's when you might find yourself unexpectedly pregnant spontaneously. And this couple has shown that they are ovulating, their fallopian tubes are normal. So even if she does have, at the end of the day, endometriosis, it's unlikely to be severe enough to be the cause of her subfertility.
So is it another consultation with your gynecologist, or is it stick with the IVF clinics?
Either should be able to steer. Certainly the IVF, the general gynecologist can make a diagnosis. And The country is now establishing some super treatment referral centres, one in Tallaght, one in Cork, and then some smaller units like the three Dublin maternities, Limerick, Galway, where they're going to set up specialist endometriosis services and fund specialist endometriosis services so that the patients can be funneled into this service. And some of them are already in the process of being set up. We're appointing people to our service in the National Maternity Hospital, but it'll be a much more streamlined channel to patients being referred, patients being diagnosed. And if there's a fertility element to their presentation, then they'll be referred on to IVF units.
Endometriosis is something, Shane, we've covered many, many times here on this programme, you know, over the past number of years. And one thing that I've learned from talking to listeners, the number of people, the number of women who end up, you know, been diagnosed with endometriosis only actually when they get pregnant or in the process of trying to get pregnant.
Yeah, because as I said, there's a spectrum of disease and there's also a spectrum of presentations. Some patients will have minimum symptoms and therefore they've nothing to complain about. And when they're investigated for subfertility and have a laparoscopy, which is almost your diagnostic test, they have a pelvis that's severely affected with endometriosis. And some patients have dreadful symptoms and minimal features. So that's why you can't simply, you know, you're on the basis of your history, on the basis of your examination, you can't simply rule out the possibility of endometriosis. It requires further investigation.
Okay, so that's for that listener's particular email. Just a follow-up text now from another listener, Shane, about this. I have endometriosis. I've had huge issues with it over the years. We're thinking of starting a family. Should I go to a consultant, first of all, to meet with them before we start trying?
Well, what we would suggest for patients who have a diagnosis is endometriosis can affect fertility. So normally we'd say to couples, you should be trying for at least 12 months spontaneously before you embark upon an IVF course of action or course of treatment. But for patients with a known diagnosis of endometriosis, try for 6 months. You don't know whether the endometriosis is severe enough to affect your fertility. So try for 6 months. If at the end of that you still haven't conceived, that's the time to perhaps go and seek specialist advice and treatments.
This listener says, my daughter is 19 and only started her periods at nearly 17 years of age. They've always been really irregular, sometimes every 3 months. Her last was on was 23 days late. Could this be endometriosis or have fertility consequences for her in the future?
Well, so it's a slightly different issue, but there's nothing in the presentation that suggests the patient has endometriosis. They have a late menarche, which is the time at which you start having your period. So they need to be investigated more from an endocrine perspective. With reference to could this cause subfertility? If you have a very long menstrual cycle, then the likelihood is you're not ovulating, and that would be the issue for that patient with regards to her fertility. If she wants to investigate herself now or be investigated now to see, is there a problem with the access that controls ovulation, which starts in the brain and then goes to the pituitary and then goes to the ovary, then that's a very appropriate course of action. But if she's not ovulating, it may not be an issue for her now, but it may certainly be one down the line.
Now, another listener email. I've been trying to get pregnant for a few years. We've had a few early miscarriages and a couple of failed rounds of IVF. We're both in our late 30s. We're unsure as to what to do next. We've been recommended to try immune testing through a friend. I'd never heard of it. I only know of a couple of places that offer it, and I wanted to get Shane's opinion about what he thinks and is it something worth giving a go. Some of the tests we've been recommended are natural killer cell tests, KIR genotyping, and the Emma Alice tests, as well as a couple of others. Quite a few have been suggested, but we can't afford all of them. So I want to know what's worth getting and where's the best bang for our buck.
Okay, that's a really good question, and I do have some resources for your listeners. So there's a website called the ESHRE, which is the European Society for Human Reproduction and Embryology, and there's a lot of really good information on that website. These tests that your listener refers to are what are referred to as add-ons. And ESHRE will give you guidance as to whether they believe these add-ons are beneficial or not. They do cost a lot of money. Some of them are looking at the patient's immune system with a view to suppressing the immune system around the time of implantation.
Can I stop you for a moment? Why would somebody who's trying to get pregnant get immune testing?
Okay, so there's immune testing and then there's the microbiome. And what they're trying to establish and what they're suggesting by testing you for these natural killer cells is that you might, in the lining of your uterus, have a hostile environment. And when it comes to the fertilized egg implanting, it fails to do so. So failed implantation. So the natural killer cells and the immune testing is to take you down one avenue. The Emma and the Alice is looking at whether there's an abnormal microbiome, which is the bacteria, the viruses and the fungi that would normally exist in our bodies in various sites, whether that's abnormal and creating a hostile environment. But rather than go through each of the add-ons, and there are many, many add-on tests, what I would recommend your listeners to do is to go to the ESHRA website or to go to the Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority website. And I can certainly provide the email addresses for these for your patients. The Human Fertilization and Embryology actually go through a traffic light system where they say, this add-on, where's the evidence to support this? And in some cases, there is very little evidence to support the use of these investigations and subsequent treatments that might follow on from that. So I would caution listeners to jumping into a very expensive battery of tests.
Can you give me, give us a rough ballpark of what we'd be, is it IVF kind of money or is it?
It is. By the time you get all these tests done, blood tests, swabs, samples, the Emma Alice test is a sample of the lining of the uterus. That's several hundred to €1,000.
Just alone for that test. Yeah. And when this listener talks about whether or not to go for the natural killer test, the KIR genotyping or the Emma Alice test, is there any one you recommend or do you need to get all three really?
No, I wouldn't. Personally, I'm not recommending any of these tests. Right. And I'm suggesting your listeners go and read the evidence to support any of these add-on tests. Go to the ESHRA, go to the Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority. They're written, these guidelines are written so that the patient themselves can appreciate and understand. And certainly when it comes to recommending any of these tests, there's clear guidance on these websites for each of these tests.
Okay, so it requires further research by the people, by the couple here involved, really.
I think so. And only certain fertility units are offering this. So the National Maternity Hospital Marian Fertility doesn't offer these tests.
Okay, so and the first website you mentioned again, I just want to give the
ESHRA,
name.
ESHRA, the European Society of Human Reproduction and Embryology, ESHRE. But I can provide them.
Yeah, we'll share that certainly on my own Instagram as well, and hear it through News Talk. We've quite a number of texts coming in from men looking for information, queries, questions answered around fertility and testing. So perhaps next week we might make that the
Absolutely.
Focus. Yeah, of our attention. And in particular, I suppose if any of the guys listening today want to send their queries in, you can drop us an email, lunchtimelive@newstalk.com, or it's 087 1400 106. That's the WhatsApp number. Shane Higgins will be back next Wednesday to answer those queries for you. But for the moment, Professor Shane Higgins, Master of the National Maternity Hospital. Shane, thanks for joining us on Lunchtime Live.
It's a pleasure, Andrea. Thank you.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.